This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
7:36 right here on the Tuesday edition of Power Business, on the eve of the medium-term budget policy statement to be delivered by the Finance Minister Tito Mboweni in Parliament tomorrow. We are going to look more into expectations there and delve deeper into issues that are likely to be tackled. And today our focus is on struggling SOEs, one of them being Eskom. We've spoken about SAA. We are also going to be in discussion about AXA a little later. But on Eskom, there is a research report that is indicating the roots of a crisis and avenues for what it focused. Now, this financial mismanagement, the just transition, the role of the international climate funding in alleviating Eskom's debt problem, suggesting that there could be a lift of 250 billion rand in debt using public pension funds. We speak to researcher at the Institute for Economic Justice, Sonia Palazzi, on this matter. Thank you so much for your time, Sonia.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Now, this is a report well-researched and loaded with information. And one of the issues that we often overlook when we look at irregularities at the likes of Eskom, we forget to mention the term financial mismanagement. Let's talk about the complexities and the dynamics that have played out at the power utility, focusing on financial mismanagement, which is ultimately what led the parastatal to its current form.
Yeah, and of course, you know, the issues that have arisen at Eskom are more or less a confluence of issues that have worsened its financial position. So, for example, corruption in its own way has also costed Eskom an incredible amount of money. But we also know that Eskom is currently in a debt crisis. Right, it has over 450 billion in debt that it needs to somehow resolve. And we know too that because of corruption, it hasn't been able to manage its costs efficiently. We also know that a lot of its customers haven't been able to, municipalities rather, haven't been able to pay at a rate that is appropriate. And so now we see a significant decline in profitability since about around 2007, which has in many ways just sustained over time.
All of this has prompted calls over the past recent years of accountability, seeking to, you know, get reimbursed at some level or the other. Is it even worth it when we look at the magnitude of this issue of financial mismanagement at Eskom? Because where are we going to start?
I think the point is that we need to start, right? So, for example, Medupi and Kusile, that is a huge kind of project to kind of unpack and find the roots of where the problems actually started. Mm-hmm. But I think it's still worth starting and figuring out where the lapse in management were. And yes, I agree with you, it's a really big problem. But there were people involved. And even though we have, you know, revolving CEOs over time, I think as we see now currently with the commissions into inquiries into corruption, that it is worth unpacking and finding the roots. Otherwise, we risk Eskom is such a central aspect of the economy. It risks, you know, in the risk of contagion.
Yeah, that's where, you know, the point where you raise about the build program related to the likes of Medupi and Kusile comes in, because we are way behind the progress that was meant to be made initially when these projects started. A lot of irregularities too. Mm-hmm. Labor issues have halted the progress of that build of power stations. And it also speaks to a just transition that is meant to happen at Eskom, but has not been happening. And most of the revelations that we are finding out in the State Capture Commission of Inquiry, when they talk about the power utility, speak directly to the mismanagement of which we started this conversation, discussing. So the complexities at Eskom speak to a historic and systemic issue in South Africa of leadership. How do we even begin to navigate this when we look at expectations from an MTBPS that is after an emergency budget and we are within a pandemic? After we've been in technical recession in South Africa, and we know that energy supply is one of the anchors that are dragging us way back.
Yeah, and I think the crisis has definitely kind of underscored the urgent need for a resilient kind of energy system that supplies reliable and affordable energy, especially to critical sectors under, you know, extreme unprecedented stress, such as the health sectors. And so you speak to the just transition. I think it's very important that we think about how we transition away from coal in a sustainable way that protects workers' jobs and livelihoods and shifts the economy towards a zero carbon energy forms of production and manufacturing. And so these are the things that we need to start unraveling. As much as we, you know, we need to think about the failures in leadership in the past, we also need to think about the future and the future of Eskom. And I think the just transition and then empowering workers in that process will be central to that.
Another issue that we often neglect is that topic around the unbundling of the parastatal. It came to light with an announcement from the president and again from the finance ministry, and we now have a CEO that is fairly new, arguably, in Mr. Andre de Reiter, and unbundling is still on the table, but implementation, again, it seems like South Africa is still going towards that pace at a very snail's one.
Yes, indeed. But, you know, it must be acknowledged that COVID has in many ways kind of slowed down the economy in general. So I think it would be too soon to make an assessment about whether or not they're behind on the unbundling strategy, although we do know that this process is definitely currently undergoing.
Does it make sense for South Africa to be unbundling the likes of Eskom in their current state? Because there are calls for the entity itself to be treated like a business, which makes perfect sense on paper. But when we look at administration challenges, the South African context does not allow for that, if history has taught us anything.
Yeah, I mean, it is tricky. I think the main point here is that if we unbundle, does that mean that jobs will be lost? I think that's central to this conversation is, and that's why the just transition is so important. Is that we need to start thinking about who does this really impact? And so there's lots of talk about unbundling, you know, kind of assisting in streamlining accountability mechanisms, and management mechanisms, which is obviously very important. At the same time, we also need to think about who we prioritize in this process. And I think very much we should prioritize the workers in the coal industry currently who will be worse for wear.
And the latter takes us to that conversation under the just transition element of it, because there are calls in the labor, the labor union setup that a framework that is aimed at even at board level, that you have union members or workers within the board structures to ensure that there is protection of the ordinary worker as well as what it is that we input and output out of an entity as big as Eskom.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, if you think about unbundling Eskom, we are essentially streamlining it, essentially making it smaller. And although we do know that Eskom is currently its employment rate is inflated, we still need to think about transitioning these workers into renewable energy by 2030.
Let's also talk about this lifting of the 250 billion rand in debt using public pension funds. This is one that has received pushback from those who are in the public service because it's their money, essentially.
Yes, it is. It is their money, and I'm not going to say that it isn't risky because it is risky. It comes with a lot of risk. Eskom itself is risky, and that's probably why we're undergoing unbundling. It's a way to signal to the market that processes are put in place to kind of de-risk Eskom so that, you know, private investors feel more comfortable with investing in it. But I think, you know, now is the time for innovative solutions, and now isn't the time to shun solutions to this problem, as it has, you know, huge implications.
We can't keep doing things the same and expect different results. And, you know, the argument is valid from the public service that at what point is the South African government going to let go and seek even more out of ideas that may exist to save these struggling parastatals? And the role of the International Climate Fund comes into play here to try and alleviate Eskom's debt problem. But who wants to even touch the likes of Eskom?
And yeah, we need to also think about the capacity of government. We know corruption is a huge issue in this country. This needs to be addressed. And as long as there's, you know, not enough public trust in the state, then it becomes very difficult for other investors, like institutional investors, such as your pension funds, to even think about investing in a state-owned enterprise.
Lastly, your personal expectations from the MTBPS tomorrow on the side of Eskom. We've heard it all before from the Finance Ministry. Do we even expect a minister in Tito Mboweni to take an even tougher stance that is obviously going to be uncomfortable for many?
Yes, I think he will kind of double down on structural reforms, which will have huge implications for all citizens, taxpayers for the next 5 years. We make a distinction as well between structural reforms and structural transformation. And what we argue is that what Tito needs to be doing is actually changing the productive base of South Africa and towards more sustainable methods of production, as opposed to, you know, just tightening our belts and austerity measures for the sake of a budget surplus, which historically does not trickle down to those most marginalized in our community. So I don't expect much from him. I expect a double down on the structural reform, but I'm hopeful that civil society, you know, finds a way to navigate the space over the next few years.
Cautiously optimistic. Thank you so much for sharing your views with us. That is Sonia Palazzi, researcher at the Institute for Economic Justice, this evening.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.